Hello and welcome to Digital Insights, featuring topics from the BoagWorld.com blog. My name is Paul Boag, and on this podcast I offer advice on user experience and digital transformation. And today I want to start by asking you a question. How well do you really know your users? It's a question I ask all the time, and people rarely feel like they've got a good handle on who their users are and what they want. Part of the problem is that user research can feel intimidating, can it? To help address that, I want to use this podcast to give you a quick introduction to user research. Well, I say quick, it's going to be quite long actually for this kind of podcast, but it's still going to just scratch the surface of this subject. I want to share with you 10 techniques that you can use to improve your understanding of your users. But before we jump into those techniques, we need to begin by answering a more fundamental question. What do we want to know about our users? In my experience, most of the research into target audiences within organizations has a marketing slant to it. For example, if you look at the average persona, they tend to focus on demographic information and personal taste. From a marketing perspective, that makes a lot of sense. To appeal to somebody, you need to understand their values and attitudes. But when creating a great user experience, our user research needs to have a different focus. When I undertake user research, the emphasis I place is more on what the person wants to do rather than what kind of person they are. Both are useful, but focusing on what a person wants to do informs content, site structure, and functionality. In particular, I tend to look at the following areas. First of all, the user's journey. An interaction doesn't happen in isolation, it's part of a bigger journey, and the user passes through many steps before and after interacting with your website. Understanding these steps is crucial to designing a good experience. Second, the user's questions. Most users come to a site with a question that they need answering. Those could be as broad as, does this company provide the service I need, to specific questions about how your offering works. If we don't know what those questions are, then the website is not going to meet users' needs. Number three is users' objections. Many of the questions that users have are actually concerns or objections. There are reasons why they might be hesitant to take action, and we need to know what those objections are so we can address them. Next up is the user's tasks. Users don't only have questions, they also have things they want to do. That might be buying something or contacting the company, and a good website has to support these tasks, and so we need to be clear about what they are. We also need to know what influences the user. Users don't decide to act on your website in isolation. A range of things, from reviews to your competition, influence their behavior. User research should uncover these influencing factors so you can address them. Then we need to know what interactions the user is having with your company. Again, the website doesn't exist in isolation. Users interact with the company in many different ways. They use online channels like social media, as well as offline, such as a call center. Understanding where these website fits into these interactions is essential. Next up, we want to know about how the user is feeling. State of mind is an aspect of user research that's often overlooked, and yet it plays a big part in how a user views a website. Our state of mind impacts our cognitive load and the time we're willing to invest in a site. We also need to understand the user's ultimate goal. When a user comes to your site or your app, they're trying to achieve something. They have a goal that they want to reach, and understanding what that goal is helps us accommodate better the user's needs. Alongside goals, there's pain points as well, because often a user's goal is to address a problem that they're facing. This pain point has driven them to look for a solution, and they want to know whether your company can provide that solution. User research will reveal what the problem is and how the user expresses it in their mind. So now we know the kind of thing that we want to learn from our user research, let's look at some of the techniques that we have to uncover that information. Organizations often know far more about their company than they actually realize, and the problem is that this information is distributed across the entire organization. For example, the customer service team may well have records of the common questions they get asked when customers call them. Equally, salespeople spend time with users every day and so understand a lot about them, including the objections they have to buying. Then, of course, there's the marketing team, which has done their market research, and the IT department that have access to analytics. So before you do more research, check that you have access to everything the organization already knows about its customer. Doing this will not only make you much more informed, but will also help you to identify any gaps in your knowledge which need to be filled with user research. When it comes time to fill those gaps in your knowledge, then we have an enormous range of techniques available to us. And so what I want to do now is outline 10 and explain a little bit of when and how you should use them. The first is surveying. Surveying has long been a tool of market researchers everywhere, and it's used by user researchers too. There are two types of surveys that I particularly favour when carrying out user research. That is top task analysis and what I call barrier surveying. I'm not sure that's the proper name for it, but that's the name I use. Top tool analysis is a technique for better understanding what it is users want to achieve on your website. And there's an excellent article on the Alista Part website explaining the technique in more detail, and I'd highly recommend you check that out. It's especially useful for informing information architecture and visual hierarchy. Now, what I call barrier surveying seeks to understand what the barriers are that are preventing a user from taking action on a site. We can achieve this by displaying a survey when users go to leave your website without taking action. The survey can then ask them why they decided not to act and provide multiple options for them to choose between. Second technique available to us is interviews. And interviews are very much the backbone of user research. They're held in one of two formats, really, individually or in groups. Both have their place, and the group format can be appealing because it allows you to talk to multiple people simultaneously. But personally, I tend to favour interviewing people individually. Individual interviews avoid group dynamics where quiet people are overlooked, and they also avoid dominant people swaying the entire discussion. Now, there's no magic formula for interviews and no set questions that you should be asking, but often the conversation will uncover areas such as the user's background, their use of technology in general, how they're using the product, the user's objectives and motivations, and their pain points. If you decide to meet people in groups, you might actually be better off running something like a customer journey mapping workshop. Instead of interviewing people, you carry out a series of exercises to visualize what their experience has been like. A mapping workshop will certainly help you to know your users better, but it will also provide you with deep insights into their journey and the various issues that arose. Not that journey mapping is the only workshop exercise you can do with users. There's lots of opportunities to include the user in the design process, and that provides all kinds of insights into their goals, their questions, tasks, and pain points. This is known as participatory design. You can involve users in wireframing key pages or mood boarding or even writing content. Most of the exercises we do with clients would be much improved by involving user in the mix too. The most common way of including the user in the design process is card sorting. Card sorting helps ensure that user interfaces is built around the target audience's mental model, and it also avoids falling back on organizational jargon. Now, there are two types of card sorting, open and closed. Open asks users to organize content in a way that makes sense to them, while closed card sorting gets users to arrange content into predefined categories. In either case, you learn a lot about the user's mental model. You also learn about the kinds of information they want, as they will be quick to tell you if they feel content is missing. Another alternative to user interviews is usability testing. And you could argue that this isn't really a user research technique because it's about testing the interface rather than understanding the person. But usability testing does provide valuable insights into the user. It also helps us understand their mental model, their tasks that they want to complete, questions that they have, and their general approach. The fact that usability testing provides insights both into the interface and the user makes it an efficient use of time. Also, the outcomes can feel more tangible than an interview, in my experience. Because usability testing is about the interview interface and not really about the participant, I often find that people tend to relax a little bit more and open up more. And that helps gain valuable insights into their thinking that would be missed if they were more guarded. You can carry out usability testing remotely, but if you're looking for insights into the people you're testing with, I'd recommend meeting in person. You will lose a lot of those non-verbal communication cues when communicating remotely. There is only one thing that beats meeting people in person, and that's meeting those people in their home or place of work, which brings me on to the next technique that you can use, which is in-field studies. Going to users rather than having them come to you makes all the difference in the world. First, users are much more relaxed, leading to more honest and open conversations. But secondly, and more importantly, you get a much deeper insight into being able to see their environment, where they work, where they live. Seeing where people access your website or product allows you to see the context and influencing factors, because the environment has a massive impact on somebody's experience, and that's invaluable to understand. Not only that, but seeing the environment will give you insights to them as a person as well. Of course, the problem with interviews and workshops is that they're time consuming, and they also require access to end users, which is not always easy to get. So what do you do if time and access are limited? Well, I find that social media monitoring can be provide fascinating insights into users and what they want. Noting what people say about your company online gives insights into their questions and frustrations, but looking at their profiles will also give you a sense of who they are and what they're interested in. Also, monitoring related keywords to your business will help identify pain points and goals. We can also look at how people are using our sites by doing site monitoring as well as social media monitoring. So we can look at what are people searching on, what pages do they spend the most time engaging with, what routes are they taking through a site, and what screen elements hold their attention. All of these things give you more insights into how the user is thinking and what they want. The other massive advantage of site monitoring is that you're observing real users completing real tasks. Unlike other user research techniques, users are unaware of your presence, and so you're not influencing them in any way. Tools like Google Analytics or screen recorders like Fullstory make monitoring like this easy, and so there's little reason not to be running this kind of user research on an ongoing basis. Of course, the drawback of site monitoring is that you don't get insights into people's thinking. And even in an interview setting, you only get a snapshot. One way around this problem is to ask users to keep a diary of their experience over an extended period. Now, I'll be honest, I don't use this approach a lot, but it is valuable when trying to improve the experience of a customer over time. This is especially true when the customer has a prolonged interaction with the company. For example, keeping a diary for buying on an e-commerce site would make less sense. But when purchasing a service from a company, a diary would prove more valuable because that service takes time to be, you know, provided. Now, which of all of these different techniques you use will be dependent on time, project circumstances, and the availability of users. However, doing anything is better than doing no research, so don't feel put off if you can't do very much. Even collating what you already know as an organisation will go a long way, as long as it's used to inform decisions. The problem is that all too often user research is ignored, which is why visualisation is so important. For user research to be useful, it needs to become part of every decision you make, and that means it needs to be visible when decisions are being made. Unfortunately, too often user research is confined to some report in a drawer or a slide deck that somebody presented once upon a time. We need to do better. As a bare minimum, we should be producing empathy maps. In many ways, empathy maps are like personas. They focus on a fictional or real person and describe various traits about that person. But while personas focus on demographics, an empathy map is about tasks, questions, pain points, and experiences. Empathy maps are easy to create, but they suffer from the same danger as a report. They can end up in a drawer and never referred to again. To avoid this problem, I recommend turning your empathy maps into designs that you can display on a wall. By turning them into a poster, for example, you ensure that they're always visible and therefore increase the likelihood of them getting consideration. The same is also true for customer journey maps. An empathy map, you see, is a snapshot of what we know about a user. It is a summary of their behaviour. However, in reality, behaviour changes over time. The questions people ask, the tasks that they're trying to complete, and even how they feel will alter depending on where they are in the buying process. So to reflect this idea of the user being on a journey, you can create something called a customer journey map. That represents the stages a user passes through in their experience. It also highlights different critical characteristics about the user at each of those stages. What information you capture about the user as they go through their journey is pretty much up to you, but often it reflects similar criteria to your empathy map. Once again, this needs to be visualized in a way that ensures that everybody takes user research into account during a project. But if you want to adopt a fully and truly user-centric approach, you may wish to use story cards. Most projects have some form of specification that outlines what the project will deliver, and that typically focuses on functionality and content. But what if you started from a different premise? What if you started from the user research and specified the project based on user needs? User story cards allow you to do precisely that. They define the project as a series of statements about the user and what they want to do. Each statement consists of three parts: the audience, the task they want to complete, and their objective. So, for example, a user story card for my blog might read, "I'm a digital project manager. I want to sign up to the newsletter so I can keep up to date with the latest user experience design techniques." A single project will have many audiences, with each audience wanting to do many different tasks, and the result can be a large number of user story cards. However, by framing the project with story cards, you embed the user research into the final deliverable. Now, I'm aware that this is a long podcast, and even so, it's far from comprehensive. However, it should act as an introduction to user research and the tools available to you. Hopefully, it will encourage you to do at least some form of research before starting on your next project. The most important thing to remember is that even a little user research is better than none. If nothing else, it will demonstrate the value to you and your stakeholders, and hopefully that will encourage further investment in it later down the line.